Bazinga Patinga. We're talking Doctor Who, the Saranga Conundrum. Up next on Don't Blink from Golden Spiral Media, celebrating 10 years of podcasting.
This is your Don't Blink podcast, a fan podcast devoted to the BBC series known as Doctor Who. Sharing thoughts, theories, and listener feedback are your hosts, Wayne Henderson and Jada Wilkerson.
Welcome back to your Don't Blink Doctor Who podcast. I'm Jada Wilkerson, Whovian, comics enthusiast and storyteller.
And podcasting for 13 years, I'm Wayne Henderson, your voice acting Green Bay Packers fan, and I thought there'd be more questions. And on this edition of Don't Blink, we'll review this week's Doctor Who episode, The Saranga Conundrum. Say that 10 times fast. And we'll go over the weekly Twitter and Facebook poll results.
And we'll share more of your great listener thoughts and theories. And to let your voice be heard, call our voicemail at 304-837-2278. Or by using our voicemail widget from anywhere in the world at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. Now, let's dig into our favorite things from the Saranga Conundrum episode.
And a thing or two that I wouldn't exactly classify as one of my favorite things. But let's dig in, Jada.
Well, you know what? Let's start with the obvious, the Saranga. The ship and its crew. How'd you feel about those guys?
I thought it was an unusual collection of people and creatures, but I thought it was fun. I thought this was a really fun episode, and the Saranga ship itself, I thought, looked very, very cool.
Oh, yeah, it was a great design. I love seeing great designs in Doctor Who, because they don't, even though it's a sci-fi show, they don't show a lot of ships, and when they do, they make me happy. I liked it.
And when Jade is happy, we're all happy. Though it was very strange, you know, right before the Doctor and the best friends end up on this Saranga ship, they're on this, like, garbage planet with metal detectors or something along those lines. You see the TARDIS way off in the distance, and they're trying to find something. And I just thought that scene was weird, out of place.
Really? I really enjoyed that scene a lot because, again, it showed that they had been adventuring outside of what we see. And it was a little bit of mundane life of a time traveler, kind of. You know, like, sometimes they're, as she described, what was it, the upward raining falls of somewhere that they enjoyed. They went bathing there. I liked what it showed, or what it didn't show.
Yeah, it might have been mundane for the Doctor. I'm sure these types of things are not mundane yet for the rest of the crew out there just in space on some planet searching for stuff. The special effects were a little lacking in that scene, but I'll give him a pass because what are you going to do?
Yeah, I guess it's hard to replicate an entire junk planet. But, you know, I have to admit that I really enjoyed Graham in those scenes. And
yes,
Doctor Who coming back has been such a big thing, and I've been just so overwhelmed with the idea that it's back, everything that's new, that's changed. Somehow I haven't fallen onto the Graham bandwagon yet, but I think with this episode, I really looked into Graham. I mean, I think he had better episodes, but I had an eye out for Graham this episode, and I'm really enjoying him more and more every episode.
Yeah, me too. I'm actually enjoying all of the best friends, each in their own unique way. Graham did get a lot of good scenes this week, and we'll be talking about some of them later on. And of course, his relationship with Ryan and some of the scenes of them together were some of the best of the episode. But of course, we have to, I wouldn't call it the elephant in the room, the monster creature in the room, the Pating.
The Pating.
How about that guy? He won't eat organic matter, humans, other aliens, but he will eat everything else, or she, whatever it is.
It will. It's indestructible. It's toxic to touch. It's unkillable. It's wow. And it's so cute.
Yeah, cute until he bares his teeth. He was a very unique design, and I loved how he added a bit of the drama to the scene, because if they don't find a way to at least temporarily defeat this Pating, he's going to basically eat the entire Saranga ship and let the rest of the life forms float off into space and die. So he had unique features, and we've got some interesting thoughts about him in the listener feedback section coming up later on this episode of the podcast. So stay tuned for that. And a early plug to join our Don't Blink Facebook group, because some great photos were posted by y'all. And if you want to see them, just go there, because interesting. That's what I'll say.
I like the Pating. What was interesting, well, one thing that was interesting about the Pating was the idea that, again, the creature or monster of the week didn't really have ill intent. It wasn't a malicious thing. It was just following its natural instinct, we think.
That's a good point. It wasn't necessarily out trying to take over the universe.
Right, yeah, it was just eating.
And running amok and snarling. But at the same time, when its back is turned to you and you see its little tail, it was still, like you said, very, very cute.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Well, good, because you're getting one for Christmas.
He's
could you imagine? He'd eat through all the wrapping. He'd eat your entire, he'd probably even eat your podcast microphone. So, okay, no Pating, not this year. I'm sorry.
This is okay. I'll just re-gift him. Yeah, I'm sure I know a person or two that deserves a Pating.
Yeah.
But, well, you know, the patients on board were interesting too, especially the general and her. What did Dirkus, her brother, call him? A clone drone?
A clone? Yeah. I think he called him a clone drone. His real name was, or his given name was, I think, Ronan, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
He was interesting in himself. The whole collection of these other, I guess they're all patients, since it's kind of a medical ship. Interesting. All walks of life.
Yeah. A noted general who was in the Book of Celebrants.
Now, is that a book that's been brought up before on Who?
Not that I know of, possibly, but it's not something that I remember hearing from before, so it might be another Chibnall thing.
And if not, listeners, let us know. GoldenSpiralMedia.com/feedback to send in your feedback and school us on that. But I love that aspect of the story, that we've got this famous historical epic book that a few different things are mentioned in there already.
Yeah. And I would say it was more like a volume instead of a chapter.
Yeah, for the doctor. He/she now is quite popular in there. A great thing that I found interesting as far as the world building, because I felt bad for the general because she's dying and trying to take all these medications just to keep going. But the fact that the general has this disease that they're calling Pilot's Heart, I found very intriguing, and it's a great name for a disease. And I think it just adds to the general's mystery as this great battler and pilot, that she now has Pilot's Heart.
Yeah, I thought it was a wonderful bit of world building. In a few short steps, they informed us about a war, a people, a condition, and a lifestyle that we didn't know anything about before. I thought it was done very well.
Yeah, and her younger brother is on board, though he doesn't exactly get along with Ronan, but he had a lot of great points about him as well. So he's helping out his sister, and he is no slouch himself. It comes off that way early. They kind of give you the impression that he's always been in his big sister's shadow because, you know, she's a general and everything. But he stands on his own quite well.
Yeah, in the beginning she said something like, he was always the one to walk away from responsibility. So immediately they color him as somebody that might not be quite on top of things. But as it turns out, he was.
Saves the day. So that's always a plus. I do want to throw in one little quick thing, because we've enjoyed so far this season, and even in some parts of this episode, you know, we've been blessed with some great background music from the new music crew so far this season on Doctor Who. But Jada, this week, much of it just wasn't that good, in my opinion, and it seemed to just drone on and on and on and on. It must have been intentional, but it just seemed like such an odd choice.
You know, and this week I wasn't able to view this episode the way I normally do, and I had to view it on a smaller device, and I had to use headphones. And I found it a much more enjoyable experience. I heard everything, and it was great. And I heard the music, and I started to think, wow, that's great. The music's subtle. You don't really hear it that much. And as it went on, I was like, oh, that's a little bit much there. And I thought that like two or three times. And like I said, and like, well, I guess you just said, up until now, the music's been great this season, but I think there were certain times where it did just drown out a bit much. It felt kind of like previous seasons, where sometimes the musical score would completely drown out what's being said.
Yeah, let's just say if they continue the trend of having a soundtrack album for this season, maybe those tracks can be left off or edited into very brief segues. That's all I'm saying. I'm sure that next week we're going to get back to some more great music, because, yeah, some of the first few episodes of this season, the music was very unique and a very welcome change. And this was just a minor misstep. Nothing too harsh. Didn't bring down the whole episode for me. It was just a little bit different. All in all, because of all the different things going on in this episode, it very much reminded me of possibly an episode of Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams series that was on Amazon, at least here in the States, last fall. Or even, in a way, not really an homage, but it kind of had the same feels for me as the original BBC TV version of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I see that. I wasn't able to see the Electric Dreams series here, but I totally see the connection, or I can see how that would feel like The Hitchhiker's Guide.
I mean, yeah, out of the blue on this medical transport, we've got Yoss, and apparently he is pregnant, very pregnant. Was not expecting that, Yoss.
No. I enjoyed Yoss. I enjoyed everything that they were trying to do with Yoss, what they were trying to say and get across, and all the touching moments and the comedy. That was a highlight of the story for sure.
Yeah, there was definitely comedy, especially when Graham reached around to try to help out, and then he's like, oh, I can't unsee that. Whatever it was he was seeing, we don't need to know. But it was very effective how not just the pregnancy and everything tied to it, how Yoss originally didn't want to necessarily be a father and have this son, but then with the help of Ryan and Graham and conversations, he's going to be there. He's going to keep this baby avocado. he's going to be there, which is the most important part. So Ryan's past experiences with his mostly absent father coming into play to help somebody else out. And I thought that was really nice.
Now, what I did enjoy about that is the fact that Ryan never made it about him. Ryan never said, well, you know, my life was hard. I didn't have a father, blah, 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 so on and so forth. He spoke good words, words that Yoss needed to hear, things that would help him. Not about, you know, another's plight or anything dark. He kept it light. I really enjoyed that whole exchange between those two.
Yeah, that was good stuff. And of course, well, shall we dig into a few brief unanswered questions that we both have about the episode?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, based on the teaser preview for next week, and I know some people avoid even those as being spoilerific, but I'm not going to spoil anything, but in that trailer, it appears our team and the Doctor have gotten the TARDIS back because they're able to transport to apparently a planet that looks like Earth. So I'm just wondering if in the next episode, if they're going to show us how the Doctor got the TARDIS back, or if it's simply going to be implied, because she was very, very concerned being on the Saranga ship, hurtling away and being unconscious apparently for a few days, that they are getting further and further away from the TARDIS at every moment. But it seems that all is well that ends well. But I just wonder if we're going to see that.
You know, actually, I believe that that's a great question. I would really like to see that, only for the fact that of that it would give me a little bit of closure, because in the earlier parts of this episode, the Doctor did make a big deal, and rightly so, about her TARDIS being stuck there. And I did enjoy how she called it my home, our home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's great. That's their home now. They've moved in with the Doctor, and they're just time travelers. Yep, no, you heard me right. We're just time travelers. That was great. But a large deal was made of the TARDIS and her having to get back. She'll just walk, she says. She'll walk by herself. And so I was waiting to see that or something, or I would like to see it, but I guess they did leave us with the information of after a couple of hours of whatever kind of detox they're going to go through, they'll be teleported back to the planet. So they might just leave us with an implied, we made it back home.
Okay. So no matter how far away the actual Saranga ship gets, that they'll find a way. I mean, obviously they are going to get it back. I just kind of felt bad even for the TARDIS itself, because everybody else got brought up to that ship and there's that little TARDIS, bigger on the inside, of course, but sitting on that garbage planet. Hopefully nobody mistook it for garbage, you know.
Well, and, you know, I also, that whole exchange about her being worried about the TARDIS was great. And what a great change, because normally it's the Doctor's worried about getting back to the TARDIS or needs to get something from the TARDIS or something. No one's ever really worried about the TARDIS's safety. And the TARDIS can obviously defend itself. It's got HADs. It's got all kinds of things that it can do.
Right, definitely.
But it was good to see her genuinely concerned. I mean, that's my ship, you know? And it also implies that we're working now with a bigger universe than we've really, not a bigger universe, but a more populated universe than we've seen in previous these iterations of Modern Who. A universe where someone like, I can't remember his name. He was Joe McRacist from the future in the Rosa episode.
Oh, we'll worry about his name if he reappears.
Right. He knew it was a TARDIS. I like that.
Yes.
I like a universe where the Time Lords are known and they are just another instant in the universe. They're not the gods that for a while it seemed like they were being held up as.
Exactly. It's the universe just keeps getting bigger all the time. And now we've got a baby avocado that's living there. And so he's really growing it. Oh, that's right. The future racist guy, Krasko.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Not
yeah.
Krisko, Krasko. I do have a feeling we're going to see that guy again.
I mean, and you know what, though? Here again, this episode, much like Krasko and Jack Robertson and... what was his name?
Jim Shaw?
Yeah, Jim Shaw.
Tim Shaw.
Tim Shaw, yeah. So, we have characters that disappear that possibly could come back. I like it.
And I bet at least half of them will come back, whether or not it's later this season or next season, which is a long, long way away, but one thing at a time, I suppose. Did you have any unanswered questions on your side?
No, you know, I think we kind of touched on most things from this episode. I mean, there were tons of great scenes. Again, I think that this season they really hit the ground running. I'm enjoying each episode more and more. Or each episode is making me enjoy the season more and more.
Well, since you're enjoying it so very much, let's go ahead and dig into our host ratings. How'd you feel about this episode as far as if you had to assign a number on it?
Well, you know, I think I would give this one 8. 8 out of 10 unsettled ectospleens. What's an ectospleen? What is an ectospleen?
That's a fine question, but 8, very strong. I'm almost right there with you. I'm going to give this one 7.5 out of 10. Really weird, but fun stories thrown all into one episode. Because they covered everything from ship-eating monsters to pregnant men and baby avocados and...
avocado pear.
Generals. You
know, the Earth Hero.
Yes, generals with pilot's heart, all those things, and lots of heroics all abound.
Hi, this is Stephen Amell.
Hi, I'm Juliana Harkavy, and you're listening to Aero Squad with Tammy the Chameleon and my favorite, Martin the Flash.
That's right. Did you hear that? I'm her favorite.
You do know I paid her to say that, right?
No one will ever know.
Anyways, this is Cammy, and if you love the TV show Arrow like we do, then come join us on Arrow Squad.
That's right, and this is The Flash, where each week we break down the episode and share listener feedback.
And listen to this, or my fiction or alter ego will hunt you down. Enjoy.
You have no choice but to enjoy Arrow Squad, another fine podcast here on the Golden Spiral Media Podcast Network at goldenspiralmedia.com. Now, to lead off the listener feedback, we've got the results from our weekly poll on Twitter, where you can find us at Doctor Who GSM, and our Don't Blink Facebook community group, and basically just was asking, what was your favorite part of Doctor Who, the Saranga Conundrum? And 67%, no surprise at all, voted for the Pating, and 33% voted for Baby Avocado, which I still can't get over the explanation behind avocado. We had a couple of write-in choices on this post in the Facebook community group, and Ryan getting more character development this week was a great write-in vote because that was a favorite part of the episode. And this one that I almost forgot about till I saw that, a write-in vote for the Doctor being temporarily Sonic-less was a big plus. How do you think that Sonic is doing now that the Pating spit it back up?
I don't know if I'd use it before I wiped it off. Let's just say that.
Did it seem to come back to life? I need to rewatch the episode again. I forget if it's just temporarily dead from being inside the Pating.
It did. It rebooted itself. She seemed surprised when it rebooted itself when it got near the antimatter core.
That's right. I was actually kind of hoping the Sonic would be dead for a couple episodes and then getting back near the TARDIS might bring it back. But oh well, just still kind of hoping she doesn't use it quite so much. We'll see. Now, you can also be part of next week's episode of the Don't Blink Doctor Who podcast by giving us a call on our listener voicemail line at 304-837-2278. Or record your feedback on your phone or your computer, attach it, and send it in through goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, like Samuel.
Hey there, Wayne and Jada. Samuel Lewis here from tscn.tv/GTW. That's Going Through Who. We're back, finally. Anyway, so this episode. I'm saying this episode because I know they pronounced the name of the ship. They totally pronounced it. Guess who's having a problem remembering how they pronounced it because they didn't pronounce it much near the end of the episode. Yeah, it'd be this guy right here. So I'm just going to say this episode. The conundrum, in other words, I have my own conundrum with the title. Anyway, interesting stuff about this episode. The creature. They took the concept of a gremlin and put it in outer space. If anyone doesn't know what a gremlin is, look it up. There are fascinating bits of lore about the idea of a gremlin going all the way back to, I think, like the 40s or something like that, involved with it being a creature that would get inside a ship, like an airplane, a battleship. I think it was mainly military things. But anyway, the point was that a gremlin would get inside the works and sabotage it. So the Pating, funny how I remember Pating, but not the other thing. The Pating was pretty much an outer space gremlin, and it delighted me to death that it was, and that something that small was that destructive. And they made it very clear that instead of it being something that wanted to rip everyone to shreds, that it was hungry and wanting to eat the ship, which was the threat to their lives, was it eating the ship and then them dying as a result of that. Very interesting way to separate the Doctor and her friends from the TARDIS, doing the whole junkyard situation, as it were, and them just running into the wrong thing in the junkyard, as it were. But yeah, interesting stuff. Interesting character developments for Ryan. I'm a bit like you, Jada. I'm a sucker for character development, and it certainly seems like that's carrying on in this, where we get the analogy of him not having a dad figure, really, along with the humanoid alien that thinks he's going to give up his child after he has it. You know, it's just a nice little metaphor that they came up with, that instead of it feeling weird to me, like perhaps it should, it totally worked. So yeah, it's fun stuff there. And otherwise, this was just a dang good episode. I especially love episodes of Doctor Who where the Doctor isn't able to play at their full game because something's going on, like either they've regenerated in the obvious cases, or they're just injured, and as a result, they have to carry on through it, even though they're in pain because the universe is involved, or the lives of the people on the ship, in this case, are involved, and everything like that. But yeah, so this was a dang good episode. I don't have many specific things to say about it other than the ones I've already mentioned, although the comedy with I am loving our different friends more and more and more. Graham has just delighted me. I may call it and say Graham may be my favorite of the three friends because he just has these matter-of-fact moments that he just says something. And yeah, it might be a bit obvious, but at the same time, he's totally the one that is the logical one saying the stuff that normally Doctor Who companions don't say. But he's the one that goes, whoa, 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 are we just skipping over this? You know, that's what Graham's role clearly is in this companion dynamic, and I love it to pieces. But anyway, I think that's all I had to say about the episode. It's just a fantastic episode, one of those that really went around. And the relationship between the brother and his sister, oh yeah, that gets you some feels right there. And the little future prayer at the end of it, hey, it got to me. Gotta say, I didn't tear up or anything, but it still made me smile ear to ear, like a that's comforting sort of smile. But anyway, this is Samuel Lewis signing off, and I'll see you guys next week. And just think of it this way. We got 10 episodes this season. We're already halfway through, guys. Time flies when you're having fun, or when you travel through it. Anyway, see ya.
Wow, thank you as usual, Samuel. Yeah, we had a debate as well as to how to really pronounce Sarang. Yeah, the title of the episode.
I actually have a harder time saying conundrum.
Yeah, a lot of things you said, Sam. Yeah, we visited. Graham was great, though. I know that's what you said at the end, but I have to admit, Graham was really great. I'm not so sure if I'm willing to say yet that he's my favorite, because I think next week will be very interesting and it might shine a little more light on another one of the friends, so we'll have to see. But yeah, his scenes were excellent.
Definitely, definitely. And thank you again, Samuel. Last week you tried to send a message. Something happened between time and space and it came out blank. But we are glad to hear your voice and glad to hear that you're going through Who Podcast is back. I listened to this week's episode like I always do, even though I haven't watched the accompanying classic episode of Doctor Who that goes with it. But I'm learning a lot, and it's one way to get myself caught back up. But yeah, that I forgot about that future prayer or whatever that was at the end of the episode. But like you said, it was kind of nice. We'll have to see where everybody goes. It's too bad that not everybody on that ship made it through the episode alive. Astos or Astos, may he rest in peace somewhere out there in space, because he was a really good character, and you could tell he was definitely the more experienced of the medical crew on the ship, and he gave himself up to save everybody else. So thank you for your service. And Samuel, thanks again for your message.
And don't forget, guys, it's always fun when you send your email feedback to us at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, like Aaron did. And this week, Aaron said she gave this episode 8.5 stitches out of 10. Aaron says, the doctor really needs a call button for the TARDIS when they get separated. Per usual, Graham is hilarious, and I'm just waiting for Ryan to give him some love back. I know we're not hardcore into shipping this season, but can we just take a moment to address Doctor taking a moment to say Yaz's name? She's special, that one. Speaking of Yaz, yeah, for more backstory on her next week.
Excellent. Thank you, Aaron, for sending in that email regarding the most recent episode. And I think that's a great idea, some sort of call button for the TARDIS. And maybe that's how we're going to find out that they do get the TARDIS back next week. Maybe there was some sort of call button we just haven't seen yet, because that's a great idea that they should have come up with sooner. And sometime this season, we're definitely going to have to see Ryan giving some love back to Graham, maybe even allowing him to fist bump, because he just kind of shined him on.
Yeah. It's getting a little old now. I think at this point, after they've been through space and time.
And helping a man give birth, I think that brings them all together.
Yeah. Just at least give him a fist bump, Ryan. Come on. And I had noticed, but I had forgotten, that the doctor did pause a moment when she said Yaz's name.
I wasn't sure if maybe it was just because she was trying to remember everybody, and she's like, well, I don't want to leave. Oh, yeah, and Yaz. Yes, Yaz. And we do get to see a lot of Yaz's backstory next week. I mean, that's not really a spoiler. That's pretty obvious that we're going to get a little bit more of each companion or best friend. And so it's going to be a very interesting episode just based on the 30-second promo that I've seen. That's probably all that we can say about it. But then again, next week on your Don't Blink podcast, we're really going to be talking about it. And we, of course, do want to have your feedback to share as well. So you can send in an email or a voice message at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, or just punch in our phone number. Put it in speed dial, right? Don't blink. And then as soon as you watch the episode, give us a call at 304-837-2278. We also got some excellent feedback as well in the Don't Blink Facebook group. Ian Wood posted a link to an article about the possibility that we may not have a Doctor Who Christmas special this year. And I know on the surface that's very worrisome, because it's such a tradition on New Who to have a Christmas episode. I don't know if it's a Chibnall thing. Maybe we're never going to have Christmas episodes again. There's also rumblings, I guess, in the article that... you can read the entire thing if you go to the Don't Blink Facebook group, but maybe we'll have a New Year's Day episode instead of a Christmas episode, and that might be the Chris Chibnall way. I don't know. What do you think, Jada?
I think it would be very sad if we didn't have a Christmas episode. Like you said, it's become kind of a new or modern Who tradition, and I really like it. I enjoy ignoring my family all day long, just because I'm in the corner waiting for Doctor Who. I know that sounds bad, but that's what it's become. I know, Christmas presents, food, family. Yeah, the new episode of Doctor Who is about to come on. I enjoy it very much. But if Chibnall in his wisdom decides to move it to New Year's, then that's acceptable too. That's acceptable too. What I fear is that too much change might be bad, or possibly damage the show a little. Because I believe in that same article, they spoke of maybe not another season until 2020. And that seems like too little Who and too big of a time.
Yeah. I know a lot of shows do have very long breaks while they, you know, really focus on excellent writing and production, you know, shows like Westworld and things like that and Game of Thrones. But for Doctor Who, oh man, if it is true that we may not get the next actual season until 2020, I hope that that means early 2020, you know, like spring or maybe January 2020.
Yeah, that would be great because I don't pretend to even know what it would entail for them to get Doctor Who out sooner. But I'm sure that there's a good reason, right, BBC?
Yeah.
But
if you're listening, BBC, let us know the reason. We'll share it here on the podcast with everybody. Just saying.
But either way, an early season would be good, though, if we had to wait.
So, yeah, since we don't have our own TARDIS where we can travel to the future and watch it, we'll, quote-unquote, patiently wait.
Well, you know, in our Facebook group, also, Gary Anderson shared an interesting article about how the Doctor having three companions / best friends might be too many.
Now, that one's a head-scratcher. I don't think three is too many at all. I think this is bringing all sorts of new and interesting angles to the show. Now, four, though I would love to have Grace still be part of the gang, but four might be pushing it, five would be pushing it, but I think three's the sweet spot.
That well put. I think it is the sweet spot. We've got just enough characters so that it's not just a dialogue between the two friends. It has to be a conversation. And we don't have so many voices that everyone gets drowned out because everyone's trying to get equal time. I think it is a sweet spot. I think it's a great amount of best friends to have. And also, I mean, it's working. We enjoy it. It obviously isn't too many.
Yeah, so that's an interesting article. Again, in the Don't Blink Facebook group, you'll find that in there as well. Fred Firestein posted something very interesting and photos to go along with it to really hammer home the point. He says, this is what I thought of right away when I saw the Pating. Spoilers for the movie Galaxy Quest, but that's been out a while. If you haven't seen Galaxy Quest by now, you deserve to be spoiled because that's an excellent movie.
It is.
And yes, the little blue monster alien creatures with a lot of teeth. They do have something in common with the Pating and Samuel's call earlier talking about the legend and the lore of gremlins. At first I thought he was talking about the movie Gremlins, you know, cause it did have Phoebe Cates, right? But no, we're talking about the actual original gremlins. And so I think between the gremlins lore and the Pating and these creatures from Galaxy Quest, I think we're onto something here.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There's a common thread and, hey, hopefully we'll explore it when the Pating comes back.
And the common thread involves a lot of teeth as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Quite teethy, these ones. Well, you know, Neil Ottenston said a fun episode. I wonder whether they will address the TARDIS issue next time. And did we find out why they were looking for what they were looking for on the junk planet? And, you know, I believe she did say at some point what they were looking for in the beginning on the junk planet, but I just, it was in one ear out the other because I thought it was just obviously inconsequential. And I guess it kind of really was.
Me too. I think what they were saying at the beginning, at least to my fairly new Who ears, just sounded like some made up Doctor Who words. We're looking for a flim flam kebobulator for the shim sham. So yeah. Watch it turn out to be something very, very important that we should have been paying attention to. But even though the visual effects weren't that fantastic in that opening scene, the fact that they were all out there with these, I wouldn't say they were metal detectors because it looked like they were surrounded by metal, but they were detecting something. It just was a very interesting opening scene and everybody just looked kind of humdrum. I'm on an alien junk planet looking for stuff like you do.
Like you do. And you know, Neil also sent us an image of the computer screen on the Saranga, and if you zoom in and look at it closely, it's a picture, an old school picture from Classic Who, of a Silurian.
What?
Yeah, it's great. I need to rewatch the episode now just to catch.
Just for that 2 second shot that might be there?
Yeah. I'm not certain at what point. He doesn't tell us at what point that this appeared. I'm thinking it might be when the second crewman, what was her name? Mabel?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I think when she was trying to identify what the Pating was, she was manipulating several panels like the one in the picture that Neil sent us. So I'm going to go back and look and see if that's when. But that's very interesting. I love that idea. I love just the little Easter eggs that they put in here.
And I wonder if that means we need to read up or rewatch episodes of Classic Who that may involve the Silurian. Were they a one-time monster of the week way back in the day?
I think they may have appeared or been in two different stories. Maybe not episodes, but actual whole stories. I think two in Classic, and then we had the one actual story about them in Modern Who, and of course we had Lady Madame Vastra. But
that she's one of those. Okay, she's a,
yeah.
That's why it rang a bell, because the screenshot that Neil posted in the Facebook group, and thank you, by the way, Neil. We love photos. I love pictures much more than words. That's, like you said, Jada, from Classic Who, because that screenshot, it does look like a great alien reptile monster, but I didn't think it looked very much like what we've seen in the recent Doctor Who with Peter Capaldi. So interesting. They're one and the same. And yeah, something's going on here. Something is happening. Neil may have helped us unlock a whole new chapter of this season of Doctor Who.
Now, you know, and that also makes me wonder, I forgot. I wonder why the Doctor remembered the name Saranga in the beginning of the episode.
It did seem a bit familiar.
She was like, why do I know that name? I keep trying to remember that name. She said several lines like that. I'm definitely paraphrasing. I wondered if we could all come back together and wrap up somehow the Saranga and the Silurians. And hopefully these are things that will be gotten back to. But if not, it just deepens the lore and gives us more for Big Finish.
Oh, absolutely. If nothing else. And if, you know, things like the Saranga sounds vaguely familiar, the way the Doctor phrased it, it very well could involve timey-wimey. You know what I mean?
Always timey-wimey.
So thank you for all of the feedback that you sent in, posted in the Don't Blink Facebook group, sent to us on Twitter, and so forth. Keep those Doctor Who conversations going in the Doctor Who Facebook group. Some of the other excellent conversations you can check into that are happening right now. We've got information about Jodie Whittaker appearing in the Doctor Who comic. Also a post about the Doctor Who pinball machine that was being written about in the Red, White, and Who, the story of Doctor Who in America book. And
we have Kevin Maguire's Doctor Who homage to comic cover Justice League International number 1, and it features 1 through 12 and Cushing. Even got the Cushing Doctor in there. That's awesome.
Now that's a deep dive right there.
That is. That's great. Well, you know, you can always follow us on Twitter at Doctor Who GSM, or you could follow Wayne at Wayne Henderson, and you can follow me at Jada Wilkerson 74. Remember to subscribe to Don't Blink in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. Also, please remember to check out our show notes at don'tblinkpodcast.com and even leave your comments there if you'd prefer, like Aaron did. Thanks again, Aaron.
And thanks again for joining us on the Don't Blink Podcast. Until next week's episode, again, please share the Don't Blink Podcast with your friends all throughout the universes, all about the Don't Blink Podcast. And until that next episode, don't blink.
Don't even blink.
Thank you for listening to Don't Blink, a Doctor Who fan podcast, part of the Golden Spiral Media Podcast Network of shows. I'm the Doctor in Utah, and the majestic tale of a madman in a box are used with permission from Silver Screen Records. They are composed by Murray Gold and performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, conducted by Ben Foster. Taken from the original Doctor Who soundtrack, Doctor Who Series 6, available on Silver Screen Records.